come I don't see Natalie on the list? I see Julia.
Thank you. The recordings are started. Please go ahead.
Natalie, are you there?
This is Julia.
Oh, Julia, duh. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot.
I'll start the roll call for you.
Alan was so tactful.
No, I just don't know what I'm talking about. Sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm the idiot of the day. Okay, Julia, take it away. Sorry.
Sure. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the SICKWIS TDP Working Group call on Tuesday, 30 April 2013. On the call today, we have Mark Anderson, Roy Balesti, Alan Greenberg, Carolyn Hoover, Marie-Laure Lemineur, Steve Metalis, Mikey O'Connor, Rick Wesson, and Jill Titzer. We have apologies from Evan Leibovitz. And from staff, we have Marika Connings, Barry Cobb, Lars Hoffman, and myself, Julia Charvelin. May I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thanks, Julia. My apologies again, and welcome all. We'll do our sort of standard pause and take a look at the agenda, which is over on the right, and give folks a chance to chime in if you have a change to your statement of interest. I will note that we're going to take item 2 and move it to the end of the agenda because I'm sort of hoping that Don can join us. He said he might be able to get on the call late, so we'll push that one down to the bottom of the list and see if he gets on the call. Any other thoughts on the agenda or statements of interest? Okay. What that means is that we're looking really at item 3, and in that item are 4 pieces of work that we're going to take a look at. The first 3 we've looked at several weeks in a row, and so unless there are feelings of acute pain for many of you, I think that what I would propose is that we skip those today. There are a couple of minor edits that went in last week, but my suggestion, again, unless there's tremendous pain in somebody, is that we save those changes for the upcoming draft of the initial report and sort of tidy all that stuff up then. I'm feeling confident, encouraged, enthusiastic that we can get an initial report out by Durbin, but the way we do that is by not chewing on these sections over and over and over again. So I'll give you all a chance to raise your hand right now if you want to take a look at any of those first 3, and otherwise move on to the 4th one in the list, which is the competition and registry services, which we took a look at last week, but we started right at the end of the call, and I thought it'd be a good idea to take a look at that one again. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually have another question or point I wanted to raise. I just got a note from Steve Metalis, who's indicating that he's having difficulty writing in the Adobe chat. I'm just wondering if others are having the same issue. I just checked with some IT colleagues, and they don't seem to have heard about that issue before, so just trying to identify whether this is something that is specific to Steve's computer. I see other people testing, so it does seem to be working. So maybe, Steve, we can connect and try to find out what's going on from your side.
Okay, thank you.
Steve, can you raise your hand? Because if you can't, feel free to just break in if you ever want to get into the queue. But why don't you try raising your hand, too?
Yeah, I can raise my hand.
Okay.
It's just this chat window, and it's happened before, and on the last 2 calls, other people had the same problem, but I'll have to pursue that offline.
Yeah, and if you want to hang on at the end of the call, Steve, I'm happy to sit with you and sort of try stuff and see if we can suss it out, because I have command on this particular work one, so we can do it without tying up staff folks. Okay, Marika, I didn't see any other hands go up, so why don't we go ahead and take a quick look at competition and registry services There wasn't a whole lot going on in this one. I'm going to make it a little bigger for me. So I think, again, the conclusion on this one is lining up with the conclusions on all the rest of them, which is that this isn't going to have a huge effect in this particular facet of things. But again, I didn't want to just zoom through it in 2 minutes flat at the very end of the last meeting. I'm perfectly happy if we conclude that this is close enough. And again, just to remind you, you'll certainly get another chance to revise this when we get the initial report pulled together. Marika's already building that document, and she's inserting these chunks as we go through them. So don't feel like this is absolutely your last chance. But again, if you've got a major point that you want to raise, this would be a good time to do it. Got folks joining the room like crazy. Mark, go ahead. Oh, Mark and Rick, too. Mark first.
This is Mark. Two comments. I think it's sort of interesting the choice of the word regime in the paragraph about possible advantages. Furthermore, some observe that if all GTLDs would work under the same WHOIS regime, this would ensure,
model.
It depends on your regime. Isn't quite the right word there. I know that's nitpicking again a bit, but that jumped out at me.
Yeah.
Easy one aside, I guess my other request is this one. This deals with competitive advantages of operating a thick versus thin registry here, and what I guess I'd ask for is examples. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that there would be advantages or disadvantages to operating a thick or thin registry, but this statement doesn't give any examples. It just says there are advantages, and moving everybody to the same model would create a level playing field. But I think I think concrete examples of where one method is preferable to the other would be important here. Thank you.
I think that's a good idea, and I'm not sure. Maybe I'll lean on Marika a little bit. I think we may have examples in the issue report that we may be able to pull forward into this. If not, I agree. It would be good to get a few examples in here. The one that jumps to my mind, of course, is the reason for the original breakup of NSI into the registry and registrar, and it does seem like we should revisit that, at least put that to bed. Marika, have you got any thoughts about that? Hate to put you on the spot, but I don't have the issue report in front of me.
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually don't think this issue was covered in the issue report. If I'm not mistaken, I would have to look back as well. But I think it was actually an issue that was brought up as part of the charter discussions. And if I'm not mistaken,
okay.
I think someone from the registry, I think it was Ray Fassett at that time, that said that may be an issue we should also be considering as part of the discussion. So I think this was actually an item that was introduced as part of the charter. And if it was in the issue report, I don't think there was a whole lot of substance around it.
Mark, you want to take a crack at some of those since you are interested in that topic and just circulate something to the list? It certainly seems like a good idea to at least have a bit of a conversation about that.
I have some ideas on where it would start. I mean, this not being one of my subgroups, I didn't really want to step on toes. I
think we're in a toes-free zone at this point. The subgroups are pretty much wrapped up except for the data privacy one. So I wouldn't worry about that. At this stage of the game, these are our documents to do with as we see fit, and this is a good time to modify them to make them work right for us. So no worries there.
I guess I can throw out some ideas I have. I guess since Marika mentioned that Ray Fassett brought it up originally, and Ray's he's not on the call, but he is in the PDP. Maybe we could reach out to him and ask for some suggestions. And I'd also request from a registrar perspective. I think there's probably a registrar angle to this. So if somebody from a registrar or someone with a registrar hat could throw out some thoughts on advantages to one model versus the other model, advantages and disadvantages, I think that would be good perspective as well.
Well, I'm going to leave you with the action, if that's okay. I'm in Teflon Mikey mode. I'm trying to not take on action items myself. I'm going to pick up enough in a few weeks anyway. Could you sort of kick that off and maybe send email to the list, but then copy and sort of do a shout-out to Roy and Volker and some of the other registrars, registries, and see if we can dredge up some examples over the course of this week.
Okay. Well, I'll see what I can do.
That's great. Thanks. Rick, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey.
Rick
Weston speaking. I thought the previous conversation was rather interesting. I was unable to come up with some from a registrar perspective. I wanted to bring up a point on capabilities within this this part of the discussion for the registry services, and just bring everyone's attention to a PDF that is an extension. I posted a link to it in the chat. It's called the Who is EPP extension, and it's only offered by one registry. It was pinned by VeriSign, and it's a capability within their registry to obtain some Who is information through the EPP protocol. And so when we're discussing or describing, extended services or the capabilities to extend services within the Who is paradigm, at least calling this out as an example, I think, is useful. And that was my only comment. Thanks.
You know, my jaw just hit the floor. I just assumed that Whois was passed through EPP. Thanks, Rick. I didn't realize that wasn't the case. Now, does that belong in this topic, or does this belong somewhere else? I'm asking that not rhetorically, but...
Well, for this topic, I mean, one of the things that we're discussing is competition in registry services between thick and thin environments, right?
Right.
And so as an example of capabilities that are offered or that could be offered through extensions, any registry can offer an extension through EPP to its registrars. I'm just highlighting that there is a capability that is found useful enough that one registry implemented it, that it was from a thin registry. And I just, think that it supports Who is, and it supports access to this information through registrars. If you like, I can probably put together a short paragraph that describes it.
I think that would be good. It seems like there's a great Yeah, I think that would be fantastic. Actually, putting two paragraphs together would be good, Rick. One would be the kind of umbrella paragraph that says an advantage to Thick Whois or whatever, a change brought about by Thick Whois is the ability to add services, and then the one that describes this as an example of one of those, and then we could slot some more maybe under there as well. That would be fantastic.
Well, I can certainly come up with a number of examples of extensions that don't exist if you want far-reaching stuff. But this is irregardless of thick versus thin. This is merely an extension through EPP that supports Whois functionality through EPP. Whether it was thick or thin is kind of irrelevant. It is an example of a way to extend EPP to support Whois functions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be great.
Two
paragraphs.
Be great. Yes. I will send them to the list.
Terrific. Welcome, Volker. Don't let me forget to circle back to Volker when Alan is done, because I want to bring him up to speed on some of the earlier conversation. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. An obvious one in terms of registrars is with the new RAA, registrars no longer have to provide port 43 service if we go to a thick registry. So that's obviously one benefit for registrars, at least perceived benefit anyway. In terms of the overall process, overall discussion we're having, we've gone awful far into it, and no one has come up with any obvious, glaring issues that have to be raised. And I wonder if we're straining ourselves too much to try to find some examples when nothing has come up, nothing else has already come up in the natural course of events. Thank you.
Let me speak to that. I think that the key group that's still working hard is the privacy and data protection group. And basically what I've done while they're working is work on some of the other stuff that we need to do in order to get a report out. So I'm not sure that we're quite the spot that you've described yet, although I'm not on that working group. But until we get that one put to bed, I'm not ready to quite sign up on that. I think as soon as that group is comfortable with their product to the point where they can share it with the rest of us, then I think we can work through it. And then I think you're right, Alan, if that particular one doesn't turn up something really hard, then I think we're at the point where we can move pretty briskly through the rest of these drafts and touch them up, certainly get them into an initial report prepared for Durban. Durban's not that far away in terms of working group time, so I don't think that we're doing too badly here.
Yeah, Mikey, my hand is back up again.
Oh, okay. Rick, is that a new hand or an old hand? Sounds like it's an old hand. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. In terms of data privacy, I am in the group, and I've been talking to Don with that, both on the list and privately. So I think we're very close to having something that is about as definitive as it's going to get.
But, that's great.
To the extent that we don't, we're not... And it's not clear we're going to have a meeting this week or not. I would hate to have this group keeping on meeting and just coming up with new things to say instead of canceling a meeting if we're not ready for it. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think that Marika is pretty well prepared to present us with chunks, and we're sort of digesting the chunks at a reasonable speed here. But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't have two or three more chunks for next week's meeting, et cetera, and be pretty close to an initial report pretty soon after that. Okay. Anything else on this competition in registry services one? Again, we get another chance to talk about it in the initial report, but I am going to push this along. Volker, the reason that I mentioned your name is that I kind of signed you up for a little work along with Mark. In the previous part of this discussion, Mark raised the question, well, we talk about advantages and disadvantages to the registry or registrars from this transition to thick, but we don't give any examples. And so Mark, I think correctly, was lobbying for a few of those. It turns out that I thought we had some in the initial or in the issue report, but we don't. And it's because Ray Fassett raised this question during the drafting of the charter. And so we're going to reach out to Ray as well. But I kind of volunteered you as the lead guy in the registrar community to cogitate about that a little bit over the course of this next week with Mark. And I just wanted to make sure that's okay if I've...
Yeah, that's okay. Thanks for volunteering me. Just send me a short email off list of what you need to know, and I'll try to collect all the data that I can.
Terrific. Well, Mark's going to take the lead on that. So, Mark, I just wanted to tie all that together for you. Okay. The next one to review, let's see how we're doing on time. Yeah, we're fine. Let's take a look, Marika, at the one on accessibility. This is the first reading of this one. Last one we were doing our second reading. And so I think maybe what we'll want to do, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. This is just to explain that basically this is a topic that we didn't really have the opportunity to review at the last call or have any extensive discussion about. But what I did is actually look at the public comments received and build the chapter based on the input provided from the different stakeholder groups and constituencies. So some of you may actually recognize some of the language there because I did do a free copy and paste in some instances where a very good substance was provided in the different submissions. So that's why you may recognize some of that. But as I said, this is what I've gathered from the submissions and hasn't benefited yet from any further working group discussion. So hopefully that's now the moment that can take place.
Thanks, Marika. And I think that this is the model that we're going to use for the rest of these chapters, is rather than organize a subgroup and send them off to work through these things, we'll have Marika prepare us a draft. We'll do a first reading, a pretty light first reading on a call, and mostly that's to get our collective attention, give ourselves time to read through it really quickly, give it a week on the list, and do kind of a hard scrub a week later. So this is, I think, the time to ask clarifying questions of the draft, and then next week is the time to ask, change of course type questions, although I don't feel real strongly about that. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve. I thought this was very good. I did have a couple of questions. One is the issue description doesn't exactly match up with what I think this chapter is about. I think this is about basically the ability of people to access WHOIS data, which is, I think, important in protecting consumers and users and intellectual property owners. But I just think the issue description may need to be a bit more sharpened there because I think that's what this is about. The second point is that, again, having to do with the title, just to be clear that, that some people will read this, if they don't read it any farther, as about being accessibility for people who aren't able to access information because of print disabilities, visual impairments, and so forth. That's kind of what accessibility has become, kind of a label for that, at least in the United States, you know, for requiring people to make material on the web accessible to people who can't otherwise see it, for example, through screen readers and this type of thing. So, again, I'm not sure that we want to change this title. Maybe that's the solution, but I think it's really a question of access to the data by users rather than accessibility with regard to disability. And then my last point was on really at the end in the possible downsides. I think this summarizes a couple of concerns and I think responds to them well. I'm not sure all of them are accessibility concerns, but on the last one about the proliferation of registries and that there may be, you know, there may end up being more registries than registrars, I guess is what this points out to. And we've always been living in a world where there are a lot more registrars than registries, which makes a difference in the Whois environment. It's just worth mentioning that ICANN now is committed to establishing a single, I used the word portal, but that's probably not the right word, a single place where people can go and get Whois data from all the GTLDs. This is something that was recommended by the Whois review team, and is now being implemented. Chris Gift, I think, is the project manager on this within ICANN. So that should be mentioned here as well. I mean, there's a mention of third-party sources, third-party services to provide aggregation of Whois from multiple sources, but there's also going to be an ICANN source of that very soon. So I think that should be mentioned in that section as well. Those are my comments on this.
Thanks, Steve. I think they're good ones. Again, I don't have enough screen real estate where I am right now to be able to yank up the charter, but don't we have a definition of this issue in the charter? And if we do, I would think we'd want to use that one rather than the issue description that's in this. Marika, yeah, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. What actually is in the issue description is what comes from the charter.
Oh, I was afraid of that. So,
but again, you know, I don't think there's any problem in expanding on that if the working group indeed felt that as part of its conversation, you know, broader issues need to be considered and just mention here that which was taken into account there. So, but I think the language of the sentence comes directly from the charter.
Okay. Well, why don't we take Steve's comment to heart and see if we can sharpen up that inaugural paragraph. Another thing that Steve's comments about the last section reminded me of, and I want to put Volker on the spot on this one. Volker, did the consistency of Whois data display language get into the RAA?
By consistency, you mean a format? Yes, we have something like that. That's the Whois specification. Let me just look that up. Let me get back to that in a second. I'll just have to...
No, as long as it's there, I'm just not familiar with the newest one. I think we might want to see if that's also in the RA, and if it is, then we might want to weave that into this section as well. Just note the, you know, it's sort of like Steve noting the ICANN portal. I think we should also note the changes in the RA and the RAA that also bear on this, just parenthetically. So no need to actually find it right now, Volker. I just didn't know whether it was there. Thanks.
If memory serves correct, that's one of the documents that hasn't changed from the prior comment period. So the format of the Whois data as presented in the Whois should be Defined now, which is, I think, a great game.
Yeah, that's huge. Great. Okay. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. Two comments. I was going to confirm that, yes, it's still in the RA out for comment, that we have a consistent format throughout the GTLDs. Reinforcing what Steve said, I think the issue description paragraph is fine. I think the title, as Steve pointed out, is slightly problematic because accessibility is a code word, not only in the U.S., but also in developing economies, for making sure that it's usable in multiple languages, you know, in local languages, to those with disabilities and things like that. So I think we really should change the title, perhaps with an explanation somewhere if the word is used in the issue report or the charter. But, you know, just as the title going forward of this section, I think we should, you know, use a term like access of who is to users or whatever, as opposed to the single word, which does have specific meanings to some. Thank you.
Oh, so maybe that's the solution, is just change the title.
In my mind, I think so. Good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even as the subtitle, accessibility in the current who is environment, I don't think it's bad once we've framed it in the issue description paragraph. But the title, which is going to show up in indices, you know, in table of contents, I think is just slightly problematic. And, you know, we're gilding lilies in this group. We may as well do it properly in this section.
Yeah, right. I mean, as long as we've got this lily under the microscope, we might as well gild it properly. I agree. Okay, so maybe that's the solution to that puzzler. Mark, go ahead.
Yes, Mark. I don't want to beat a dead horse too much. I was just going to agree with, you know, Stephen Allen's points that, you know, accessibility does have certain connotations, and we should make sure that's clear what we mean.
Yeah. Thanks. Sounds like we've definitely got that horse on the run. Rick, go ahead. Well, wait.
Rick Weston speaking. Yeah, sorry. It takes a second to
for the
button. So I wanted to, one, support the previous comments on changing the title, and two, highlight that there is a policy on the .org registry, which is a thick registry, that limits the number of queries that can be processed from a single IP address for .org, and that there is a second tier that is available that has a different limit policy that is only available to registrars. And so it's an interesting access level and policy on access that does, you know, certainly rate limits the number of queries that one can execute against that org using a fairly granular structure of IP addresses for that policy. And I thought that it would go nicely under this particular topic, as one thick registry policy is kind of, it's one of the things that registrars lose is the ability to rate limit or even set policy on who has access to the WHOIS, and that's pretty much given to the registry. And so it might be interesting to at least highlight this as well.
Ah, I see what's going on there. Yes, I agree that Volker, as a registrar, did you track what Rick was talking about? I'm assuming you did, but I just want to make sure, because if you were tracking, I'm curious if you would agree that maybe there needs to be an acknowledgement here that today registrars get to rate limit in thin WHOIS because they're the only WHOIS. But in tomorrow's world with thick WHOIS, they lose that ability. Where do you sit on that? Do you think that's something that we should acknowledge and address?
Do you mean that we would limit access to certain IP addresses in the current system and wouldn't be able to do so in the future?
Yes.
I don't think that will be a problem for registrars anymore. That will be a problem on the registry side to whether or not to impose limits on the display of the Whois. But I do not see that as a problem at this time. I mean, a web-based Whois normally does not have a limit. So the only limitation that has existed current environment is port 43 limitation, and as port 43 would be going away for thick Whois registries, that would no longer be an issue.
I guess I'm thinking less about the operational issue of, you know, and more about the issue of a bad actor coming along and harvesting vast numbers of Whois records.
Mike, that's done currently today, and not necessarily by bad actors. So I think my point has been sliding. And so for this discussion, there's two interesting points. One is that when you move from thin to thick, that the registrars lose the capability to manage query rates, and that is moved from the registrar to the registry. And so all of the registrars that participate in that registry then lose that capability, which it goes to the registry. From that point, there is a registry that has implemented a rate-limiting policy for many years, which is .org, and that policy is 4 queries per minute per IP address.
Huh.
And so that does not stop the wholesale harvesting of Whois. It just limits. It's just a barrier to entry. And so I thought that these were reasonable examples that exist today. Now, there is a third, which is what some registrars have done, such as GoDaddy is probably the largest registrar, to limit the amount of information that is available in the port 43 Whois. And that references a link to click on, which will bring you to a web-based interface, which has a CAPTCHA. A CAPTCHA is a mechanism used to determine whether humans are behind it or a machine. And it's through that limit that they then rate limit the detailed information that's available on that list.
Huh.
Thank you.
I think that's useful texture to add to this. I agree. Steve Metallitz 2, the sequel.
I think if I heard Rick correctly, I think I disagree with him, because I don't think that the registrar, that the move to thick Whois doesn't limit the ability of the registrar to rate limit its own port 43 access to its own data through port 43. So, obviously, the data may be at the registry level accessible through port 43 without rate limitations, but in terms of the data that the registrar controls, they can still rate limit there. This may be a somewhat academic question if the RAA is approved in its current form, because in the thick Whois environment, as Volker pointed out, the registrars would no longer be required to offer port 43 access. I guess they still could if they wanted to. But I don't think the move to thick affects the ability of the registrars to control port 43.
I'm going to go back to Rick and then to Volker, and then I want to sort of dredge up what's going on in the chat. So maybe I'll let Rick speak, and then Volker, maybe you can summarize the conversation that's going on in the chat here. Rick?
So, to Steve's point, if in a situation where a registrar is has a domain name that's registered to a thin registry. The registrar is the sole point of publishing the directory information, the whois information. And so because the registrar is the sole point for that detail, they are then able to rate limit the global access to that information. In the situation where we have a registry that is thick registry, the registrar then has pushed all of that same information to the registry, and it is up to the registry to limit the access to that information. The registrar doesn't have the capability of limiting that global access, right? They've transitioned that to the registrar. To the registry. It's our failure for naming all of these terms.
I agree with what you just said, Rick, and with the addition of the word global, I agree with you. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Volker? Let's see. I've sort of lost track. Oh, Volker dropped out of the queue.
I removed my hand because what I wanted to say was pretty much similar to what Rick was saying. I mean, the removal of the port 43 on the registrar level for thick whois does not remove any access to data, because the way that you would get to that data is first going to the registry and then going to the registrar in a thin environment. And as the registry already serves the complete data, when you make that first inquiry, you would never get to the registrar or need to go to the registrar. So basically, we just eliminated a redundancy that nobody actually uses.
Yeah, okay. I assume Rick and Steve's hands are old hands, but if either of you want to speak, this would be a good time to do that. Okay, anything else on this one? This is a pretty good first read. I think that maybe, Marika, you can take a crack at some revisions and push this out to the list, and we'll discuss it and then try and finalize it next week. But these are, I think, good comments. Also, keep an eye on the chat. The chat's pretty tasty today. All right, so that brings us to the update on data protection. And Don, I think, is on the call. I at least see Don's name in the chat. Don, do you want us to push your draft up on the screen for people to look at, or do you want us to hold that back for a bit until you all have had a chance to finalize it? If you're on the call, this would be a good time to fill us in.
Yes, I'm here. Why don't we hold until next week? There's just a few tweaks to make, throw up something today that I know is going to change. Why don't we wait until next week when I'm sure we'll have a final?
Okay. That sounds great. That I think, sort of encapsulates the status, too, which is really why I put it on the agenda, was just to find out sort of where we're at. It sounds like we're darn close, but as I said at the top of the call, Don, I was a little reluctant to push out a draft that I knew was still in flux, and you've just said the same thing. So I think we're on the same page there. And we'll look forward to the revised one next week.
Excellent.
With that, we've got cost implications. Marika, do you have a draft for us on that, or are we in freeform mode at this point?
Yeah, this is Marika. This is one where we don't have a draft yet, but let me just pull up the comparison document we did. So it does give a bit of a view of the positions on this topic and as well as the issues that were identified. So again, if we can make a discussion about that, that would give me some more material in addition to what people have submitted, of course, as part of the public comment forum to write something up for the next meeting.
Yes, that looks great. Okay, so if I I have to. Okay, so it's the 1, 2, 3, 4th row in this document, and to kind of refresh ourselves on our code, this is one where the X's mean the opposite of what you might think. The X does not mean opposition. It means no negative impact. So we're kind of in double negative territory here. And so the summary preliminary conclusion that we arrived at when we pulled this together was more information is needed, but in principle, most agree that there is no negative impact expected with regard to costs from requiring Thick Whois. And I think we had a couple of comments from the NPOC VeriSign and the NCUC. Now, can we see those in this draft? I'm mumbling, sorry. If I roll down, ooh, it gets really small. I don't see any specific...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marika.
This one, Marika, I'm actually quickly looking through the comments. Basically, because indeed what you see on the second page, those were issues that were specifically or specific concerns identified. I think looking here at the comments that were submitted, most were actually saying that no first-hand information to offer concerning cost implications, or we don't believe that there are any cost implications. So most things are that most of the comments basically indicated they don't really have a good view on whether there are any significant costs, and hence as well I think that the conclusion is saying that most don't really see any significant issues there, but are interested to see if there is further information available to be considered. Looking here as well, for example, the ALA comment says there will certainly be a cost of transition to both the registries involved as well as the registrars. Virtually all registrars already deal with thick TLDs, and the only registry operating thin TLDs are also operates thick TLDs, so there should be virtually no learning curve or software developments other than handling the actual cutover, and most of those registries already handle the .org conversion. The current situation with the thin Whois for the two largest TLDs increases the cost to rights holders and victimized internet users due to the need to interact with multiple, at times unreliable, registrars. NCC says as well, we have no first-hand information to offer concerning the cost implications, but look forward to reading the input of registries and registrars on this matter. ANPOC also knows that the cost implications are known by those registries who have gone through this before, but some of NCC and ANPOC also highlight, of course, that the current transition would involve a bigger number of domain names that would need to be transferred or changed. I'm just quickly reading through this and giving others the time as well to think about their comments and speak up. Basically, I think the registrars say if no change is mandated, unless the requirement to provide Whois services is changed in the RAA as well, registrars have to carry on supporting Port 43 Whois services and escrowing data at their costs. I think those are issues that already have been addressed, I think, per the new RAA. It says, well, the cost will be a one-off cost mitigated by defense benefits to come after. No Whois Port 43, no escrow and uniform data. And I think the registry comments say that any transition will have cost implications, but it's not aware of any analysis that would address these issues, and the circumstances of the .org transitions do not provide useful information. We expect that the cost primarily will be from moving information and increasing necessary infrastructure. Development costs should be minimal, as a company that maintains the only remaining thin Whois registries also manages TLDs that use a thick registry model. The only clear cost consideration applies to individuals and organizations which use the data. A thick registry that allows a single queries for a given GTLD might obviate the need in some instances to pay for access to third-party providers that aggregate registration data.
So I'm gonna jump the gun on Mark and say it looks like maybe we need some examples here, people. It sounds like everybody is sort of looking to everybody else for some data. And with that, take it away, Mark.
Yeah, good point, Stevie. And I'm kind of struggling on this one because there has to be some cost implication. There's an existing state for registries that are thin, and to get them to a thick state involves, it doesn't just happen automatically, right? I mean, there's some effort on the part of registries, there's some effort on the part of registrars, and then there's the actual migration of existing data, hundreds of millions of records, in fact. And whether that be, an engineering cycle, a test cycle, whether that be, just person hours, there's absolutely going to be some cost. I don't know how to quantify that, to be honest, or, what that cost is, but, I don't see how we can say there won't be some cost.
I don't think that's what people are saying. I think what people are saying is we don't know, and we're looking forward to seeing that. So I have a proposal, which is, and again, sorry for you, and this is another one where the registries and registrars walk out of here with an action item, but as a non-registry registrar type person, I'm not sure that I can offer much in terms of, I can certainly offer analytical support. I'm good at cost analyses, but in terms of identifying the kinds of costs and who incurs them and their magnitude, it seems to me that registries and registrars are in a much better position to do that, and that we do need some work on that, because to walk in with a report that doesn't have any specifics there, I think, is a shortcoming. Rick, I'll let you talk and then sort of see what people think of my proposal. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. So, Rick Wesson speaking. I think the way to look at this is that there's an externalization of costs. And so infrastructure costs pertaining to who is, which is the cost to manage the service, are externalized onto the thin registry that's becoming thick. And so anytime that we have one of these transitions, there's going to be a one-time cost for the registrars to move the data one time up to the registry. After that, it will function as all of the other thick registries do. And so there's an engineering cost for the registrars to move. And it'll be similar in the as far as the exercise is concerned to the magnitude with .org. On a per-record basis, the transition isn't necessarily the cost doesn't apply, basically, on a per-record basis. It's essentially the same amount of effort to move 10 records as it is to move 1,000 or 1,000,000. And the point, I think, is that the servicing of who is in managing that function is externalized to the registry. And so if you wanted to say that there is a cost and, it's some number, then you would aggregate that number across the registrars and ballpark it for, the registry as that is externalized to them. And then, of course, you would want to discount that ballpark a certain degree, because there would be some magnitude in savings of having one entity perform all of these functions. And so that's how I would approach looking at this particular question.
I think this is one where I have a question for the group. Do you guys want to do this all together, or, you know, this is my kind of meat. I love cost analyses and would be quite cheerful at either dragging all of us through it together on a call, or if some of you kind of roll your eyes and go, cost accounting is not my favorite thing, I'd be willing to form a little sub-team to go off and stitch some of this stuff together. I think Rick's got some great ideas, and I've got some too. Who, Mark, Volker, Rick, if the four of us can made a sort of core group and tried to get a call together later this week, are there other folks who would be interested in joining us? I assume, Mark and Volker, this would be something you would want to participate in and help with. But I think we do need an analysis here. I don't think we can just plunge ahead. I'm not seeing much reaction at all. Mark's in. Avery's keen to listen in anyway.
Sorry, Mikey, Rick Weston.
Go ahead, Rick.
I could make a call this week. I just wanted to offer one more data point, is that the number for processing, handling, and managing a WHOIS entry or publishing one is very, very small. Infinitesimally small.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. I'm seeing us running out of time. Actually, we are out of time. Let me do a little post to the list, see if I can pull together a gaggle of folks Thursday or Friday. I'll go into full-blown share my screen mode, and we'll do some brainstorming and pull some of this together and see if we can't at least come up with a framework of an analysis for next time. And I think with that, we'll call it a day. I was watching a lot of conversation go by in the chat. Avery, do you want to take just a minute and sort of summarize where you think that wound up? I couldn't keep track of it because I was keeping track of too many other things. But maybe just a minute before we wrap up on the conversation you were having. Pause while Aubrey gets off mute. No, she may not be able to get off mute. Well, Marika and all, can you make sure that we capture that chat? And there was substance going by in that, and I don't want to lose that. And with that, I think we'll call it a day. See you in a week, except for folks who've picked up action items, and that's it for me. Julia, you can end the recording, and we'll see you in a week, folks. Thanks.